The sun, directly overhead, had the pinkish-purple hue that threatened a serious chemstorm. Only a few torn fragments of maroon clouds marred the perfection of the bowl of the sky. The ground beneath Ryan's boots was bone dry, shifting as he moved his feet, composed of the finest dust. A tiny tailless lizard, its scales an iridescent turquoise, scuttled from one shadowless rock to another. The landscape was featureless, stretching around Ryan, making him feel like a man sitting at the bottom of a soup bowl, the gray desert seeming to rise all about him. Here and there he could make out the jagged shapes of cacti, not like any he'd seen before. They were a leprous, sickly yellow-white, with narrow spines a foot long, tapered like the sharpest needles.
Christina don't mind the desert, you know, Ryan. The brightness hurts my eyes.
It was no surprise to find that Jack Lauren was walking at his side. The vivid sun flared off the deathly white of the albino teenager's hair, deepening the ruby coals of his deep-set eyes.
You should wear dark glasses, kid.
Sorry, Jack. Forgot you don't like being called that. It's such a long time since we last met up.
Yeah. Tomorrow is the yesterday you worried about before we met, Ryan.
Or you could try blinding yourself in one eye. I did that, and it cuts the pain from the sun in half. Why don't you give that a try, Jack?
Sure. Or could pluck out both eyes and then have no pain at all.
Jack threw his skinny arms out wide.
Happiness. Being happy, Ryan.
Far off, toward the distant horizon, there was a single vivid flash of lightning that appeared to stay frozen in place, like a jagged strip of silver. Ryan turned and stared at it, but it eventually faded away, leaving only a faint, dark memory imprinted across the retina. The building to his right, a quarter mile away, seemed to be falling into a dark pool, its ivy-covered walls crumbling like stale bread. At one of the golden, lamplit windows, there was the shape of a woman with long hair, watching them across the wilderness. Jack started to run, spinning like a dervish, his bare feet kicking up clouds of dust that threatened to envelop and overwhelm him.
Careful, kid. Watch out for the big bitching cactus behind you.
Don't call me, because I'll call you, Ryan.
Of course you call me Ryan. That's my name, Jack. I got my identification on my belt.
The white-haired boy stopped suddenly, deathly still, both hands making a strange flicking motion. Ryan felt something tug at his right shoulder, and almost simultaneously at the left. A jabbing, stabbing pain. When he glanced down, Ryan saw that Jack had hurled two of his leaf-bladed throwing knives, showing his usual unerring accuracy. Each of them pinned Ryan's coat to the barn wall behind him, the home tips also nipping a fold of skin. A tiny trickle of blood ran down each arm.
Good throwing, Jack. But why did you do that?
Stopping you stopping me, Ryan. Old friend, old comrade, old look out for yourself, face.
Jack resumed his whirling dance, nearer and nearer to one of the murderous cacti.
Hey, keep an eye out, Jack.
It was extremely difficult to understand exactly what happened next. Jack stumbled over an eyeless human skull that lay half buried in the sand, and he fell face down into the cactus. He rolled over and over, his feet kicking in the air, his hands pressed to his face, pressed to his eyes, over his eyes. He squeezed tight, the slender, bloodless fingers clamped close together, but that didn't stop the blood coming through. Not white like his hair and skin. Red. Vivid, brilliant red. A venous, arterial red. It oozed into a trickle, to a sticky, steady rush of blood that dripped over Jack's hands and onto his neck and shirt and pattered into the dust, drying instantly into small, clotted lumps like dark popcorn. Ryan ran to Jack, his feet slipping, three paces forward and then two paces back. Behind him, he heard a rumble and turned for a moment to see that a huge crack had opened in the flank of the house and it had fallen into the bottomless lake. The boy was sitting up now, his face still hidden behind his hands, the blood still pumping out from the unseen wound. Ryan knelt and gently pulled away the hands, surprised how soft and unresistant they were, feeling his own hands become instantly clotted with Jack's blood. And now Ryan saw the wound. the spike of the cactus had penetrated clear through Jack's crimson eyeball and speared it out, leaving only a raw and empty socket.
Oh, God.
But what added to the horror was that the wound was so deep it had gone right through the teenager's head and out the other side, leaving a neat round hole the size of an old silver dollar, through which Ryan could see the desert and the bright blue of the sky. Jack was smiling up at him, as though God were in his heaven and all was right with the world.
Nothing too bad, Ryan. Say it. Nothing too bad.
Ryan said nothing, staring at the wound, from which a flood of wriggling maggots was beginning to crawl. In the moment of waking, Ryan found that his entire body was streaked with sweat, rigid with the paralysis of the horrific nightmare. His mouth was open, his lips dry, the muscles in his jaw aching as if he'd been chewing forever and a day on a raw hunk of inedible meat. Christy stirred in her sleep, her right arm thrown across her eyes. She pushed the cover down below her breasts, which glistened with perspiration in the cold moonlight that speared between the draperies. Ryan stood, careful not to disturb her, fighting his way clear of the fetid embrace of the goose-feather mattress. He padded naked to the window and peered through the gap in the velvet curtains. The steel bars were icy to the touch. He gripped them tight, consciously trying to steady his breathing after the dream, aware that his heart was still beating fast. The land outside was thrown into sharply contrasting patches of light and blackness, with the river gleaming like polished glass and the trees stretching away across Kansas, farther than the eye could see. Ryan looked at it with the keen eye of a combat veteran, noting the care that had gone into the defensive placements of the powerful Ville. The high wall, topped with impenetrable coils of razored anti-personnel wire, gun positions, some of them with a shadowy figure behind an LMG, the trees and bushes hacked away to clear lines of fire. Ryan was suddenly conscious that he was being observed, and he looked to the right, seeing that there was someone standing in the shadows of the turret roof on the next block along, staring directly at him. It was difficult to tell because of the thickness of the glass, but he was reasonably certain that it was the mistress of Suncrest, Marie Mandeville. Ryan closed the draperies and went back to bed, to sleep dreamlessly until the morning. Neither Baron Mandeville nor his taciturn daughter appeared at the breakfast table. Ryan and the others had been roused and unlocked from their chambers at 8:15 by Mercy Wayman, accompanied by a discreet but powerful force of a dozen Sec-men, all carrying Armalites. Mercy explained that the Baron was often a late riser, and that Mistress Marie had followed her usual practice and gone riding in the forest. They all ate at the same long table as the evening before, in the gallery dining room, served by a dozen silent women. The only other member of the staff of Suncrest who appeared was Sergeant Harry Guiteau. He nodded to them and sat at the bottom end of the refectory table, helping himself to a jug of coffee and making no effort to join in their muted conversation. Ryan felt that the Sec-man was there merely to observe, listen, and then to report back to his master. The food was varied and excellent, fresh apples and oranges, and some more exotic specimens of fruit, and heavy sweet syrup, several brands and flakes with foaming milk, platters of eggs, some over easy and some sunny side up, with ham and bacon and Lincoln patty sausages, the finest, fluffiest hash browns that Ryan Carter had ever eaten, a copper dish of fragrant refried beans, trout as fresh as the sunrise, on and off the bone, and some delicious smoked salmon, a dozen or more different breads and biscuits, all warm from the ovens, with twice as many jellies and preserves, and plenty of the wonderful coffee. Nobody said more than a few words, everyone concentrating on the rare sybaritic pleasure of eating fine food in the finest surroundings. As they'd walked down from the floor with the bedrooms, Ryan had been sharply alert, trying to work out the lay of the land, the strengths of the Ville, and the weaknesses. So far, he hadn't managed to spot any weaknesses. Just as Doc was draining his fourth cup of strong sweet coffee, Baron Mandeville made his appearance. The first clue to his arrival was the scraping of the chair legs on the flagstones as Guiteau stood upright. The Baron was wearing a crimson cap of fine wool, perched on top of his snowy curls. The Father Christmas outfit of the night before had gone, replaced by a dark green jacket over a pair of tailored black pants that were tucked into neat ankle boots. Ryan noticed what tiny trim feet the Baron had. A small, pearl-handled revolver in a holster was at his belt. It crossed Ryan's mind how often frontier barons went in for ostentatious blasters, rather than selecting dull and functional weapons.
Oh, no, no! Sit down! Sit down!
The Baron beamed and waved his pudgy little hands. In fact, the only person to stand had been his senior sec man.
Thanks for the bed and lodging. Couldn't have been better.
I think that your table is as fine as any in the history of man.
Very welcome, Doctor. All of you are most welcome.
If you want us to go, then we'll move along, Baron.
Oh, no, no, no!
The Baron wants you to see his collection of pre-darkies this morning. Then, after you take a break for some more food, there'll be the post-noon combat skills.
We can watch these tests?
Oh, of course! But better than that, all of you can take part in any of the events that take your fancy.
Are there prizes?
The Baron turned toward Gitteau as though he were going to say something, but changed his mind.
Prizes for those who do well and please me.
And those who do badly and do not please us will also get their own reward.
None of them had been aware of Marie's entry, but she was leaning over the rail of the minstrel's gallery above them, her hair falling straight down on either side of her pale oval face. She was in shadow, but Ryan again got the uncomfortable feeling that the woman was staring directly into his face, trying to stare into his soul. Nobody asked her what she meant, but the sense of the unvoiced threat hung in the air like the remembered hiss of a venomous reptile.
Good morning, my dear! Did you enjoy your ride?
No. The bitch of a mare nearly foundered under me. I had to spur her and lash her till the blood flowed to the ground to get her home.
Will you eat?
After you've gone. Gitteau?
Lady?
Remain behind.
Yes, lady.
The Baron was still near the main doors, and he beckoned to them.
Come, then! I shall show you my pictures and my weapons. I am proud of both.
Ryan was standing close to Gitteau.
I remembered where I'd seen you before. Long years ago in another place. You're traitors, man.
Is that a problem?
Not for me. Nothing's a problem for me. Nothing in Suncrest touches me, Connor.
The rest were filing after the Baron. Marie still watched motionless from above. Ryan smiled at the sec man.
You can't be a diamond swimming in a sea of shit forever, Gitteau.
No?
No. Doesn't take long before you're just another shit-covered diamond.
Mandeville had been oblivious to the conversation between his sec sergeant and the Outlander.
My pictures first. I was always a lover of the art of painting, even before I was able to obtain some for myself. Now I have them here in this gallery.
Mandeville led them out of the dining room, along a broad passage with three flights of stairs opening off it. Ryan noticed the sec men posted at the angles of the corridor, none of them showing the boredom and indifference that he'd seen from guards in other, sloppier villes. They tracked the stout figure up a wide staircase, each step made from a single block of rose-tinted stone. The banisters were marble, and some sort of heraldic animal stood guarding it top and bottom.
This way.
The Baron acknowledged the salute of a sec man.
Morning, Brat. Wife better? Much. Thanks, Baron.
They moved on, Mandeville turning and speaking over his shoulder to his following guests.
One of the best in the ville at hand-to-hand until he dislocated his right knee a year ago. Broke his heart, he couldn't compete anymore. Any of you people much good in that field?
Eyes darted toward Ryan, who nodded at Michael. There didn't seem much risk in showing their skills to Baron Mandeville. If he'd wished it, they could have all been sent off to buy the farm at any time since they reached Suncrest.
I'll give it a try.
You? You're a tad young for rough and tumble. Still, I like your courage, young man. Brother, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't suppose any of you have a way with a knife? Throwing?
We used to know a boy. Could put a knife in your eye at 50 paces.
Hope that isn't how you lost your eye, Cawdor. Of course, you said it was a rabbit, didn't you? rabbit! I like that, Carter.
They turned a corner, finding themselves facing an immensely long gallery. The morning had been cool, and fires burned in six hearths measured along the length of the gallery. A little smoke had drifted out as the wind veered easterly, and the room was so long that it was impossible to make out the far end through the woody haze. The ceiling was 15 feet high, and there was not a single window in either of the endless walls. It was lit with strings of hand-cast light bulbs that flooded the walls with a golden glow. Ryan noticed that a significant proportion of the lights had malfunctioned. But what caught the eye were the pictures. At that first startling glance, it seemed to Ryan that there wasn't a single inch of space on the walls, from floor to ceiling, that wasn't covered by pictures. All had been hung haphazardly, some of them overlapping. Many were in ornate frames of Rococo gilt, while some had plain frames of unvarnished beech or elm. Some had glass over the paintings, but most were uncovered.
By the three Kennedys!
Doc Tanner stood stock still.
Kaya, you must have all the paintings left in the Deathlands, Baron.
Oh, far from it, Christy. I may call you by your first name, may I not? Good. No, there are many other barons throughout the world who have collections every bit... Well, honesty makes me admit that their collections are not quite up to the quality of my own gallery. Oh, not quite.
Quality or quantity? He sure got the quantity.
Perhaps I should take you through picture by picture. Though that would take us all day and most of the night. I want you also to admire my collection of weapons this morning, and there are the games this afternoon. No, we will move along the gallery, and I will comment on any that are especially dear to me.
Ryan found the next hour or so lurched past him in a blur of names and colors, giving the cumulative effect of staggering boredom. There were more paintings in that single room in Suncrest than he'd seen in his entire life. But after the first couple of dozen, they all started to merge in his mind. He remembered the first one clearly. The small brass plate on the bottom of the frame said it was by Eric Bailey, R.A., though Mandeville wasn't sure what the initials meant. Possibly royal artist, as the man had been English. It was a large portrait of a modest young woman conversing with a canary in a cage. She wore a dress like a Puritan's, with a white collar and cuffs, and her hair was smoothed, nun-like, into a low chignon. Though it was impossible to ignore the nubile curves of her body, on her face was an expression that struck Ryan as rapturous imbecility. The title of the picture was The Pretty Maid.
She looks double stooped, Dad. Like she was going to eat that jaybird.
Mandeville didn't hear Dean, striding on ahead, his hands locked behind his back, beaming with a proudly proprietary air. Mildred and Doc boggled in amazement at some of the paintings, which they said were very famous, though both of them, making sure that Mandeville didn't hear them, suggested that they thought that quite a lot of them were either fakes or prints of the original pictures. Ryan couldn't find many to admire, though he enjoyed a large canvas of a fallen tree with dark jumbled branches against a field of bright rapeseed. The signature looked like Alan Burgess, but he couldn't be certain. One of the few pictures from the over-the-top collection that everyone liked was an impressively plain painting of a rectangular adobe building with a shadowed door against a reddish-pink southwestern landscape. Mandeville said he didn't know who it was by, but had traded a pair of matched Navy Colts for it a few years earlier. Doc and Mildred were in agreement that it had been painted by a woman artist called Georgia O'Keeffe. Names flowed by Ryan as the pictures blended into a mosaic of multicolored wallpaper. Hopper, Picasso, Winslow, Warhol, and Remington. One of the few names that prompted any interest at all from J.B. Michael peered at the name beneath a portrait of a sturdy, naked woman with a plait of reddish hair.
One of your relatives, Mildred?
Andrew Wyeth? No. No relation.
The smoke settled on Ryan's chest, making the atmosphere more oppressive. The talk had been fairly desultory at the beginning, but by the time they'd all joined the Baron at the distant end of the gallery, a gloomy silence had descended over them all. Mandeville was sitting on a brocaded chaise lounge, waiting eagerly for them.
Well?
Amazing. Double amazing.
Yeah. Never seen so many pictures all in the same place.
Beautiful.
Christie looked back at the diminishing perspective of the gallery, its distant entrance quite invisible in the dusty haze.
No criticism? Just unstinted praise?
I thought there was too many of them. I liked some, like that desert house and that woman lying on the hillside. And I thought the one was a hot pipe with the raft and everyone chilled. But there was just too many all at once. Sorry, Baron, but you asked.
Too many pictures?
Mandeville's merry little face had gone cold, as though a mask of ice had been slipped into place.
Mozart, the great composer, was once told by his noble patron, the Emperor, that a piece of music contained too many notes. Mozart asked the Emperor which particular notes he thought that he might profitably remove.
Mandeville threw back his head and joined in Doc's merriment. The ice vanishing, and his rosy Father Christmas cheeks and smile returning. But Ryan noticed that the meltwater look never left his eyes. Ryan had glanced at his cron several times during the interminable visit to the Ville's art gallery, watching the digits tick over with agonizing slowness. Yet somehow it was already close to noon, and a faint rumbling in his stomach warned him that some more of the Baron's excellent food would be welcome. It was a fact that had also impressed itself upon Mandeville himself.
Damnation and blast it! I wanted to show you my guns and swords before we ate. But now it's the mid of day and the games are set for 2 o'clock.
Do you collect anything else, Baron?
Pictures and weapons I... Why? Why? What have you heard about my private... What? What am I... Oh, of course you didn't know, couldn't... Unless that unnatural bitch has been...
He had a gold hunter watch in a pocket of his vest, on a golden fob chain. It suddenly started to play a tinkling, melodious little tune, but he couldn't recall what it was. It broke the thread of Mandeville's anger.
I think that every one of you probably possesses some sort of cunning in fighting. I feel that, Carter. Yes. Oh, yes. The ladies will watch, if they wish... And the bright little boy. But the rest of you will amuse us.
If you like. But if you have anyone who reckons themselves with a hand blaster, then I'd back Mildred against them.
Back the woman? Sergeant Gateau is the best I've ever seen. Oh, Mildred can shoot against him if she wishes.
I wish, Baron. I really wish.
Once again, the refectory table groaned under an assortment of cold meats, salads, and pastries, with jugs of chilled fruit punch to drink. JB sat next to Ryan, picking at a plate of sliced roast beef with some cold potatoes and pickles.
You think going in for these combat games of his is a good idea, Ryan?
I don't know. Just have to wait and see. They start in an hour, so we won't have long to wait.